Morning, Oregon. I'm Finn J.D. John, FJ at OffbeatOregon.com, and this is the Daily Offbeat Oregon History Podcast. Happy Friday! And to help you celebrate, today I have a brand new show for you, which has just come out from under the 60-day embargo period during which our participating newspapers have exclusive rights. So thanks for joining me, and I hope you enjoy the show. This story was first published on July 20th of 2025 under the headline Machine-Made Ice Cream Cones Were Invented in Portland. Here we go. This time of year, the burden of all the serious arguments and disagreements left over from Thanksgiving dinner melt deliciously into a far more congenial controversy which plays out at every ice cream shop in the land. Do you prefer a cake cone, waffle cone, or sugar cone? If you're partial to the wafer-like texture and subtle flavor of the cake cone, especially after it's become slightly soggy with melted ice cream, you're certainly not alone. And the bold cookie flavor and crunch of a sugar cone has many fans, too, although most Americans, given a choice, go for the generous size and luxuriant crispness of a waffle cone, sometimes dipped in chocolate. I'm a cake cone guy myself. I know that's kind of basic, but that's me. Regardless of your preference, though, unless it's hand-rolled using homemade dough, your favorite cone is the great-great-grandchild of the first mass-produced ice cream cone that dropped out of a brand-new machine invented and fabricated in Portland, Oregon, circa 1912. The brainchild of a creamery executive named Frederick A. Bruckman in collaboration with his boss, George Weatherly. Bruckman and Weatherly didn't invent the concept of an ice cream cone. Their role was more like the one Henry Ford played in automotive history, or Thomas Edison in the incandescent lamp. They took a product that had formerly been made painstakingly by hand, or in the case of Edison, as a laboratory toy, and automated its production so they could bring the price down and sell it to everybody. Bruckman was the primary inventor. He was a creamery man from Illinois who had moved to Portland in 1906 and taken a job with Weatherly's company, the Weatherly Creamery Company. Weatherly was an Oregon boy who'd grown up on a farm in Pleasant Valley, which is now a neighborhood of East Portland. In 1892, he'd bought a small confectionery store on the corner of Martin Luther King Jr. Avenue, which at the time was called Union Avenue, and Morrison Street in East Portland. And that is how he got into the premium ice cream business. This, of course, was long before refrigeration was a thing. Ice cream was a rare treat, and it was made the old way by melting ice with lots of salt to cool it below freezing and then agitating a mixture of cream, sugar, flavorings, and add-ins while it froze. Weatherly started out making the stuff with a hand mixer, feeding it with ice he bought from Crystal Ice and Storage Company, a local outfit that cut ice from the caves near Mount Adams and shipped them down the Columbia River, insulating them with sawdust for Portlanders to use to cool their beverages in the heat of summer. Demand for Weatherly ice cream soon outstripped what George could supply with his hand mixer, and he upgraded his equipment again and again. Soon he was running a small wholesale ice cream sales operation, and not long after that it was no longer so small. By 1900, wholesale profits dwarfed what he was making in his confectionery store, so he sold it and concentrated on ice cream. In 1907, Weatherly Creamery Company merged with Crystal Ice and Storage, but continued selling Weatherly brand ice cream. Meanwhile, of course, Weatherly had hired Bruckman, and Bruckman brought with him an obsession with eat-it-all cones. Knowing very well that a machine-built cone would yield tremendous synergies for his ice cream sales, Weatherly encouraged Bruckman in his quest and probably financed some of its research and development, too. Working with Weatherly apparently in a sort of informal partnership, Bruckman launched the Pacific Coast Cone Company in 1908, several years before he patented his cone-making machine. And he threw himself into the quest. He'd sampled a number of handmade ice cream cones and cone-like contrivances at various world fairs and expositions over the previous few years and found some, but by no means all, of them quite tasty. But the process of making them just wasn't scalable. What was needed was a steam or electric-powered machine capable of making hundreds of cones per hour so that they would be, quote, within reach of the child who had only an occasional nickel to spend for sweets, as he put it in a 1917 interview with Western Confectioner magazine. The problem was getting the cones to drop out of the machine without human intervention. One night he watched his wife making timbale crusts, baking a batter carefully in a cup-shaped mold, picking it carefully out before adding filling for refreshments at a card party she was hosting the following day. She carefully picked the crusts out of the little molds, taking exquisite care that they should remain perfect. Now, he mused, how can I automate that? He also watched the construction of one of the bridges across the Willamette River. Food historian Heather Arndt Anderson observes that this was probably the Hawthorne Bridge, which was built in 1910, and it gave him the idea of using a crosshatch waffle pattern to strengthen the cone. The pattern would cause the cone to stick in the mold, and solving that problem led him to the major breakthrough, which was a two-piece mold that would pull away automatically, letting the finished cone drop right out. Another aspect of Bruckmann's cones is less discussed in the historical record, but it was clearly a huge factor in his success, the flavor profile of his cone batter. Put simply, it was nearly perfect, right out of the box, right from the start. We can't possibly be far off in attributing that recipe to Bruckmann's wife, Hetty Mae Drace Bruckmann. Someone who makes her own timbale cases with such exquisite care for a card party the following day is clearly no mean pastry chef. For a creamery engineer like Bruckmann to get the pastry recipe as right as he did on the first go, and mind you, that recipe is still in use to this day, as we'll shortly discuss, inconceivable. No, overwhelming preponderance of circumstantial evidence says Hetty Mae Drace Bruckmann was the uncredited pastry chef who made it work. I would bet heavy money on this. In any case, get it right they did, and finally on July 20th, 1912, 103 years to the day from the time of this writing, Bruckmann and Weatherly jointly filed the patent on the world's first machine-made ice cream cone. And then, of course, with the protection of an applied-for patent, they went directly into business. Lots of business. By 1915, they were cranking out nearly a billion cones a year. That's Carl Sagan billion with a B. Both Weatherly and Bruckmann were well-off business owners already, but the invention of the cone machine made both of them stupendously wealthy. Bruckmann retired in 1919 and moved into a Tudor-style mansion on Mount Tabor. Later, he and Hetty Mae moved to eastern Marion County to help their son Merle develop Brighton Bush Hot Springs Resort near Detroit. After Hetty Mae died in 1940, Bruckmann married his childhood friend Harriet Eliza Ross, a nationally famous artist and doll designer. They ran Brighton Bush as a family until 1956, when it was sold. In 1958, Frederick Bruckmann died at age 85 in a nursing home in Salem. As for Weatherly, he had an even more eventful second act. In 1925, his company merged with Western Dairy Products of Seattle, and Weatherly basically retired from regular involvement, staying on as chairman of the board at Western. At the same time, he turned to a real estate development project, which resulted in the 12-story Weatherly building, which still stands today on the same spot where his little confectionery store was at the start of his ice cream adventure. After that, Weatherly tried an experiment with pheasant farming, setting up a small operation on 2 acres near Multnomah. The market for these toothsome game birds turned out to be tolerably strong, so he limbered up his check-writing hand and dove into the business on a huge scale. He and some investors bought 100 acres at Springdale, east of Troutdale along the Columbia River Highway, and started raising pheasants by the truckload there. He called the place Weatherly Farms. Most of the pheasants they raised at Weatherly Farms ended up on dining tables at places like the Arlington Club, Multnomah Hotel, and Myron Frank's Georgian Room. Many were also shipped to other cities around the West. Weatherly died of a stroke in 1948 at age 80 and was buried in Rose City Cemetery. I mentioned that the original ice cream cone recipe, which was likely crafted by Hetty Mae Bruckmann, is still in use today. In 1925, Nabisco bought out Bruckmann and Weatherly's patent for the cone machine and put it to good use, cranking out Comet brand cones. These are still in stores today, and several years ago, Savour magazine named Comet America's best-tasting sugar cone. So, next time the ice cream bug bites you, you know what to do. Key sources in this story included works by Heather Arndt Anderson, John Terry, Florence F. Fisher, Fred Lockley, and S. J. Clark. Well, that's our show for today. Thanks again for listening, and I do hope you enjoyed it. This podcast is part of Offbeat Oregon History, a public history resource for the state we love. Check out our hub page at offbeatoregon.com to explore all the other things we do or to find the full citations and visuals that go with today's show. Hey, if you like listening to me talking about interesting stuff, you should check out my new podcast that I've started this year. It comes out 3 times a week, and it's called the Penny Dreadful Hour Podcast, and basically we work our way through 6 different Penny Dreadful story papers from the 1840s and 50s and 60s. Sweeney Todd, the Barber of Fleet Street, Varney the Vampire, or the Feast of Blood, Black Bess, or the Night of the Road, starring highwayman Dick Turpin, The Black Band, or the Companions of Midnight, which is an international espionage thriller from 1861, and Rose Mortimer, or The Ballet Girl's Revenge, which I'm not quite sure what Rose Mortimer is, but it is a barn burner of a story. Check them out wherever you get your podcasts. I've really been enjoying doing the show and watching it grow, and I hope you enjoy it as much as I do. Our theme music is by the Atlas String Band and was written by Carmen Ficarra. For more about them, atlasstringband.com. Offbeat Oregon History episodes come out once per weekday, usually around 6 a.m., so it won't be long before the next episode is on your device and ready for you to queue up and enjoy. Until it is, go out there and fill up the rest of your day and the weekend with good stuff. Bye now.